Good evening. I'm Jim Zirin. You are watching The Digital Age. Tonight, we have a terrific show for you about the presidential elections and the congressional elections as well. Our guest is an expert. He is a top-notch Democratic pollster. He has worked for Bill Clinton and Michael Bloomberg. He knows who's in, who's out, who's up, who's down. It's Doug Schoen. Doug Schoen is the author of a great new book called Hopelessly Divided. Hopelessly Divided, The New Crisis in American Politics and What It Means for 2012 and Beyond. Doug Schoen, we're delighted to have you
with us.
Jim,
thank you for the kind introduction.
Well, looked at the polls just before the conventions, and it looked as though it was too close to call. And now they say that Romney is slipping and slipping badly. I mean, is that true? And what's
happening? I think it is. I'm not so sure Governor Romney is slipping as much as some of the more recent polls suggest. But it's undeniable that President Obama has pulled out to about a 5-7 point lead. Now, whether that lead is sustainable is, I think, a very big question. It'll be at least partially resolved by the first debate. But as we sit here today, I think it's clear that the president has a clear, undeniable lead.
Well, of course, this can change, but the latest polls I've seen show the president ahead 10 points in Ohio. He's ahead about 7 points in Florida, ahead in Pennsylvania, ahead in Ryan's home state of Wisconsin. I mean, what swing states are there left for him to capture?
Well, the governor has a fighting chance in North Carolina. But seriously, your point is exactly right. Unless Governor Romney wins Florida, Ohio, and either Wisconsin or, say, Virginia, he's not going to be president.
And he's trailing in all those states.
He is trailing in all those states.
And trailing decisively.
What
went wrong? Is it his campaign? Is it something he said? Something he ate? He was doing so well.
I think there are three things. First, the American people are looking for a message of change. And Jim, with all due respect to Governor Romney, I haven't heard that message. I don't know what it is. He didn't do it at the convention. Second, the Obama campaign has managed to raise questions about him with their attack ads. And third, the president has been very disciplined with a message that I find somewhat unsatisfying because it's class-based and it sort of involves demonizing the rich. But that being said, they've been effective, I think, in driving that message.
Well, you had, of course, President Clinton's convention speech. I think he hit the ball out of the park and it's still going.
I would agree with that, and I would say the best asset that President Obama has had so far has been Bill Clinton.
And I think more than his endorsement of Obama, his saying that we are coming out of our economic problems, you have to give it some time, and we should be a little more optimistic about America was something that really resonated with the voters.
Well, it sure resonated with me. Look, I've obviously, as you suggested in your introduction, advised President Clinton, and he basically was able to place President Obama in the context of the kind of policies he supported and we worked for in the 1990s, and I think you're exactly right. That has benefited President Obama inestimably.
And by contrast, I think Obama's speech was kind of a mediocre speech, certainly by comparison. Romney's speech, according to Gallup, was worst speech that's ever been given at a convention since he began polling.
Well, I think they made a mistake with Governor Romney's speech. They tried to humanize him. Bottom line, people vote for leaders. They vote for ideas, they vote for change. Sure, they want nice guys to be president, but bottom line, when you're in the middle of an economic crisis, people want to know what you're going to do to change things, not that you have a great relationship with a loving wife.
So you think the flaw is he didn't really say what his plan was?
I think that is the flaw. I think it's continues to be the flaw. And the real question is, next week, October 3rd, can he, in fact, change that?
Well, we'll get to the debates in a minute, but what about the famous 47% remark? You think that set him back substantially?
Jim, I think that was one of the dopiest things I could think of. Three reasons for that. First, and most important, most of those 47% work for a living. Second, of those people who work, the vast, vast majority probably do pay some property tax, but I meant to say payroll tax, Social Security tax. sales tax. They are taxpayers. Many of them are even Republicans and are voters for Governor Romney. But to divide America into those who pay federal income tax and those that don't, I think is a misreading of how to think about America and American politics.
Well, the New York Times editorially delivered a stinging rebuke. They said, "Gone was the pretense that Romney will be a president of all Americans. Mr. Romney rather neatly divided the country between the people who matter and the 47% he does not care about."
Well, I think there's been a narrative in the campaign that Governor Romney has facilitated that he does not care about those at the lowest end of the income spectrum. And again, two things about that. First, a disproportionate number of those people, though probably not a majority, are minorities. And I don't believe Governor Romney has spoken to them. And second, the message that the Republicans and Governor Romney has put forward has not really spoken to how to grow the economy for all Americans. And you can be for capitalist solutions like Jack Kemp was without being a liberal Democrat. I don't think Governor Romney has sufficiently addressed those concerns.
Well, then you have, I don't know whether you want to call him a conservative or a moderate, David Brooks. He started his career on the National Review, so he certainly has some conservative credentials. He said in his September 17th piece, this comment suggests a few things. First, it suggests that he really doesn't know much about the country he inhabits. Who are these freeloaders? Is it the Iraq War veteran who goes to the VA? Is it the student getting a loan to go to college? Is it the retiree on Social Security or Medicare? It suggests that Romney doesn't know much about the culture of America. Yes, the entitlement state has expanded, but America remains one of the hardest working nations on earth. Americans work longer hours than just about anyone else. Americans believe in work more than almost any other people. 92% say that hard work is the key to success, according to a 2009 Pew Research survey. Romney's been campaigning for 8 years. He's sought the office over that period of time. How did he miss it?
Well, Jim, I would say there's substantial truth in what David Brooks wrote, but I think there's something even more fundamental. We use our taxing policy to try to encourage, I dare say, stimulate beneficial economic activity. There's something called the Earned Income Tax Credit, for example, which was proposed by Ronald Reagan, which is not to penalize people for hard work at low income levels. That could, in some instances, wipe out substantially, if not totally, income tax liability. I think that's a very good and important program. I think social insurance of the type that's represented by Social Security is important. But I don't think Governor Romney thinks that way, and I think the premise of your question, thus, is substantially correct.
Let's just talk for a moment about the Romney campaign. What kind of marks do the voters give the campaign itself?
Well, let me be very clear. I'm not an Obama supporter. I'm not supporting him. I've written articles publicly saying he shouldn't run for re-election because he's been divisive himself. So I don't say this from the point of view of an Obama or Democratic partisan. But that being said, I don't think the Romney campaign has made a cogent and coherent argument against the president. They've been very negative. They haven't outlined solutions. And if you look at the polling, the campaign gets very, very low grades for its credibility and for its transparency.
Well, they had to do more, didn't they, than just Obama not. They had to have a plan that they were offering to the people.
And that responds directly to your point. He's had 5 or 6 years where he's been on the stump. He could have outlined some sort of ideas or plan, and so far I haven't heard it.
Now, the story is his campaign staff is in disarray. Conservative writers, Peggy Noonan says that Republicans feel it is slipping out of Romney's hands. Joe Scarborough, a conservative, self-styled conservative, says that it is slipping away. He's running behind the ticket in many key districts. Has this hurt the perception of him as an executive who can take charge and run the country?
Undeniably so. I think that if you look at the most recent polls on the economy, Governor Romney is tied with President Obama. That's been his strong suit. Some would say his only suit, and it seems to have dissipated.
Well, let's turn to the debates, which you mentioned. October 3rd is the first debate, and the common refrain among the diehard Republicans is just wait till the debates, then Romney is really going to show everybody that he's more presidential than Obama. What can he do in the debates?
Well, I remember in August people were saying wait till September and October when people focus on the election. Now it's wait for the debates. What he has to do is offer a cogent critique of the Obama administration and clear ideas for the future. Will he do it? I don't know. Is this his last best opportunity? It could well be.
Well, the story is that he's going to go on the attack, that he's going to say that Obama has the Pinocchio problem, that he's misrepresented to the American people, and he won't be the fact checker for everything that Obama has said, but he will go after Obama on a few key points and then say if he misrepresented and prevaricated about this, he's misrepresented about other things as well. You think that's his best tactic?
I think the best tactic would be something different. I think he's got to make the case why the president has failed, but he needs to say, Mr. President, I have different ideas, bold ideas, and a clear plan. You failed. 43 months of over 8% unemployment. Economic growth today revised down to 1.3%. Mr. President, it's not working. Look, I share with you a love of this country, but we can and do need to have a different approach and different policies. If he is able to articulate a vision and a plan, maybe, but it's slipping away, Jim.
So the Pinocchio problem strategy you don't think will work, the Reagan, there he goes again.
They've been doing that now for 8 or 9 months, and all that happens is Obama keeps going up and he's been sinking.
Well, if we may, let's turn to foreign policy.
Please.
Now, there are major foreign policy issues confronting the country. There are disturbances throughout the Middle East. We recently lost an ambassador, quite tragically, who may have been the victim of an Al-Qaeda attack. We still don't
know.
That's
certainly what Secretary Clinton said yesterday.
That's what she said. Now, that's kind of been downplayed in the campaign. Romney has made a few statements about foreign policy, and they've been sort of unfortunate.
Well, I think Governor Romney made a profound mistake. In his eagerness to get out and distance himself from the president, he overstepped. He made some assertions that I think later proved not to be true or to be beyond the facts. But the other thing that I think Governor Romney missed is that in a foreign policy crisis, the country gets behind the president. And the fact that Governor Romney was so quick to criticize, rather than emphasizing what I think most right-thinking Americans think, which is we all have to come together and pull together, and then, only then, point to the fact that an ambassador was killed on 9/11, potentially by Al-Qaeda in Libya. I think he got it wrong, frankly, and I think that's why he has backed off his foreign policy critique.
Well, of course, there's the issue of Iran as well. Do the candidates differ on their approach to Iran?
Mitt Romney says they differ, but as I read the facts and or what each candidate says, I'm not clear that there is a substantive difference between Romney and Obama. And again, I'm all for differentiating, but to attack somebody when you have a similar policy doesn't strike me as the best possible approach.
Now, Ahmadinejad, Iran's president, addressed the UN the other day, and he seemed to have soft-pedaled his criticism of Israel, said nothing about denying the Holocaust. But still, the Jewish community in the United States is very apprehensive.
As well they should be,
and about the developing a nuclear weapon. Now, Obama made it very clear what our policy is. It's a policy of prevention and not of containment. I don't know what Romney's position on that, except to say that Obama's trying to throw Israel under the bus.
Yeah, he's rhetorically more hawkish, but I don't have a sense that he is advocating preemptive strikes himself, either by us or by Israel. And it's pretty clear Bibi Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, would prefer Romney to Obama. But Obama's policies in terms of aid to Israel have not been bad. There have been times when he has been at cross purposes to the Jewish community. But I don't really have a sense of clear policy differences between the two, though it's perfectly clear to me that the body language between Netanyahu and Romney is a lot better than the body language between Obama and Netanyahu.
Yes. Now, do you see any prospect that Israel will attack Iran on their own before the election?
You know,
October surprise?
It's obviously guessing to say that. And I am not going to hazard a guess here today, but what I will say is the following. Obama has, I think, been pretty consistent. I think he was in his UN speech about what he was going to do. He's not drawing red lines. Netanyahu has been sufficiently hawkish and aggressive that I think he is trying to militate to get the United States to be more proactive. I don't have the sense that if he was about to launch a preemptive strike himself, he would have been as rhetorically bold as I think he's been.
Well, I mean, Jesse Jackson was famous for saying not red lines, but deadlines. Do you think Obama should set deadlines for the Iranians and say by a certain date you must stop enriching or else?
I'm personally sympathetic to that approach. My fear, and I know it's much more difficult to make decisions than to critique policy information, but my fear is that we're going to keep, you know, drawing lines and setting deadlines and letting them pass, and that they will have enriched enough uranium to make at least one or two bombs. I fear that. I just think we need a little bit more certainty in our policy.
The problem, of course, with a red line is that if you set a red line, they'll go right up to the red line and perhaps even a little beyond, and denies you the flexibility that you have by setting a deadline.
That is absolutely true.
But I don't think either candidate has really gotten into that.
I don't think either candidate has a clear response to what if.
Well, do you think they both sort of have a hide the ball approach?
No, I think Obama is more try to negotiate, try to find a way to solve it. I think Romney is probably more impatient. But in terms of specific policy position, it's hard to divine where they would act differently.
It seems to me that the way forward for Romney seemed to be so clear. I mean, Obama promised that he would cut the deficit in half in his first term. The deficit is still over $1 trillion. It's hovering there. It's certainly not getting any less. He says, well, give me another year and maybe I can cut it somewhat. Why doesn't Romney sort of harp on this? Why doesn't he harp on Simpson-Bowles, the very commission that Obama created?
He's against Simpson-Bowles.
He is, and so is Ryan. Now, why?
Well, because it involved raising taxes. And I I'm a supporter of Simpson-Bowles. I believe you are too. My attitude is you have to be willing to do everything. Cut entitlements, cut domestic spending, reform defense, and yes, raise revenue through higher taxes, whether it be directly or alternatively by getting rid of deductions and lowering rates.
Well, let's look at the entitlement program. I mean, Romney's solution to Medicare, well, he hasn't made it very clear, but most people in Florida, for example, mm-hmm. which is a state he has to win, don't want Medicare to be changed in any way.
Right.
They're worried about their own Medicare. Now, Romney has said, well, my program is that if you're 55 years of age or older, I'm not going to change anything. But that message didn't seem to get through.
No, it didn't get through, and I didn't think it would. I think the selection of Paul Ryan was not an inspired choice. People are looking for how we grow the economy, not how we cut entitlements. And while Congressman Ryan may have been bold in proposing what he did, I don't think it's a path to winning an election.
No, I don't know particularly where you go if you shift to voucher care, which is what Romney proposed, or block grants for Medicaid.
I don't either. Look,
it's going to be fewer benefits for the elderly,
right,
and the impoverished.
Now, we do have to cut. I mean, we don't have enough money to pay for what we've now promised people, but that is a blunt axe, I think, on a problem that I believe could be solved with much more gentle policies.
Well, it's interesting that since Clinton's speech at the convention, polling shows that 7% of those polled say that we're now on the right track, 7 points more than months ago. And so we're kind of softening our opinions about where we're going and whether we're on the right track economically.
The Obama campaign made a potentially fatal mistake that they reversed. If you remember, right before the convention, Martin O'Malley was on, I think it was Bob Schieffer, and he said, we're not better off than you are 4 years ago. Within a day, the Obama campaign had pivoted to, yes, we are better off. And if you're an incumbent president running for re-election, you have to have at least a neutral, if not an affirmative, answer to that question. And President Clinton, as you rightly point out, was able to address that concern directly and frontally.
And you take the piece I read in the Los Angeles Times by David Lauder, who said attitudes toward the economy have warmed in recent weeks.
Particularly among Democrats.
Measures of consumer confidence have begun to tick upward. Voter outlook about future conditions has brightened after a slide during the summer, and the percentage of Americans who feel the country is on the right track has risen. That's, I guess, the 7 points.
Right. And now part of that, Jim, is that voters who are going to vote for the president become more positive as Election Day approaches, simply because they've got to validate their position. But part of it is a communications campaign that, by and large, has been much more successful than the Republicans or Governor Romney's.
Well, as Keynes pointed out, in economic matters, psychology plays a tremendous role.
Absolutely.
And Clinton was successful, somehow reassuring the American people that if you just hang in there and things will get better.
I absolutely believe that.
You mentioned the ethnic groups
that,
of course, are necessary to victory, Asians, blacks, women, Hispanics. How good a job have the Republicans done at courting them?
I think not at all. I mean, African Americans are going to vote 95% or more for the president. Hispanics, I think, given the harsh and tough immigration position Governor Romney's taken, are going to vote 3/4 or so for the president. Asians, I think, will break for the president. With all of those factored in, it means that the governor needs to get close to, if not more than 60% of white Americans to have a chance to win
white
the
males, actually.
White males, and he needs white females,
white,
too.
White females, too. Now, I mean, Republican strategist Greg Strimple, who worked on McCain's 2008 campaign, said that the problem is the campaign's in spiral, the Romney campaign, and Romney needs a big idea. Do you agree with that? What's the big idea?
Again, if I had it, I'd probably bottle it and sell it. But seriously, it's got to be something related to revitalizing the economy, creating growth, and ultimately creating jobs. So far, we haven't heard that big idea.
Let's just look at the House and Senate
sure.
races. The House, I think, inevitably is going to remain Republican.
I would think it is, but I think it will get a little bit closer than the 8 seats that Charlie Cook this week predicted.
Now, what about the Senate? Will the Democrats continue to control the Senate?
You know, 6 months ago, I would say it was a lock that the Republicans would win the Senate. Right now, I think it's 50-50 or better that the Democrats will hold the Senate.
Well, they need the Republicans need a net gain of 4. They're having a problem in Missouri because of Aitken's
don't think they're going to win Missouri.
Legitimate rape remark. And then in Indiana, which where they had Lugar.
Dead heat there now, Jim.
Now it's a dead heat between
Murdoch
who wears a Confederate flag, and Donnelly.
Yeah.
Yep. And Murdoch is the guy who said Social Security and Medicare are both unconstitutional.
Right.
Why? Because they're not mentioned in the Constitution.
Right. And he was the one who said his idea of bipartisanship is Democrats should do what Republicans want.
That's right. Well, it does say something about promoting the general welfare,
yes.
But he didn't read that. What about the super PACs?
Well, you know, it was interesting. First, it has startled me that Obama has been able to outspend the super PACs and Governor Romney in the swing states. Second, reading the New York Times this morning, super PAC expenditures by Democratic-leaning groups are increasing rather than decreasing. I think the super PACs determined who the Republican nominee was. I think Governor Romney is nominated because of them. But it looks unlikely, increasingly unlikely, that they'll elect him.
Also, we're seeing a big Democratic donors to super PACs.
That was the point I was just alluding to, yes.
James Simons.
I saw that.
Yeah.
$2 million to Priorities USA and $2 million to the House and Senate PACs.
So you would say that it kind of balances out, that the big money hasn't been that decisive in the race?
I thought it would be much more decisive for the Republicans than it's proven to be. Now, one thing to be very clear, the Republicans have the capacity, I'm not sure they have the capability, but the capacity to raise vast sums from very, very wealthy people in a short period of time. The imminent victory of President Obama may well be a stimulus to those on the right to give more money to those super PACs. But at this point, my experience is political money is smart money, and if a candidate is losing, they usually don't support him.
And what would they do with the money? The attack ads of some kind?
Vicious attack ads. Most of the super PAC ads.
That may well be the strategy. So 6 months ago you were here, you called the race for Obama. Now we're 6 months more into the program.
Jim,
who's going to win?
I have had the great pleasure to come on this program, I guess, for two election cycles. I think my predictions have been mostly correct, and hopefully if I've been wrong.
Entirely correct.
Good. Well, that's I'll be
batting
back
1,000
anytime you want me. I think the president will be reelected. I think the Democrats will either end up 50-50 or 51-49, and the Republicans will hold the House with a reduced majority.
Doug Schoen, thank you so much for coming by. It's just been marvelous, and thank you for coming by. Tune in next week for more on the digital age. Don't forget to read Doug's book, Hopelessly Divided. It really is interesting. It's a must read, particularly if you're a political junkie like me. Visit our website at www.digitalage.org. For the digital age, I'm Jim Zirin. Good night and all the best.